Welcome to Manager Tools. Today, the Proactive Manager, Chapter 1, Reporting, Part 2. The questions this guest answers are, can I change how I report to my boss and the company? What can I do differently about reporting and running my team? Do I have to keep reporting the same stuff that's always been reported?
Happy April Fool's Day. Is that how you say it? Is it really supposed to be Happy April Fool's Day? I don't know. You know what? It doesn't matter. This is not an April Fool's Day statement. Your direct wants to be seen, heard, and valued as a professional. And we can help you do that. Learn the behaviors that promote relationships, communication, employee growth, and retention. The Manager Tools Effective Manager Training can be delivered on-site or virtually to everyone in your organization. Contact Maggie on our team to learn more by emailing us at customerservice@manager-tools.com.
We've mentioned not asking your boss about every single thing, and we're going to go a step further and reassure you a little. Maybe this is reassuring. I guess it could go either way. Once you're done building trust and learning how things work, it's time to start taking action. You don't have to assume that your boss knows or cares what you're doing internally. She doesn't. So we've got 90 days to build trust, and 90 days is not a scientific number. It's our reverse engineering. It's a suggestion. It's like a proxy kind of, but it's kind of our reverse engineering around how much time it takes to build trust. So trust is growing now at 90 days, and you've learned enough. You've seen enough. You've been exposed. Mm-hmm. You know where your team is individually. And it's at this point that you can start new taskings and changes to the way things have been run up until now. So if you are taking over a team, you're not standing up a new one, you're taking over a team. We've got one-on-one starting right away. Then we've got that 90-day mark. And now it is time, once you've seen some stuff, to start working on those delta items.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. And folks, again, you're a manager, right? You're not an individual contributor. You're a manager and you've got a team. Do not ask for approval from your boss on the changes that you've decided to make based upon 90 days worth of research. Let me be clear. It's not like you winged this up last night. You've been thinking about this. You had it on a list. You've been examining it. Is this working? Is this not working? I mean, you've collected enough data. Like, you know that this is the right decision. Your boss doesn't have time to run your team. That's why they have you.
Mm-hmm.
That's your job. Your job is to gather a little bit of data, make a decision, and then act upon it. And yes, it is possible. You're going to end up working for someone who is a bit more of a micromanager than is possibly reasonable. Yes, possible. Totally possible. But directors have less time than frontline managers to be micromanagers. They just do. And by the time somebody gets to the level of director, they've had enough managers in the past. This isn't their first rodeo. They've had enough managers in the past that have probably tried to micromanage them or skip them. And they probably hated it if it was done to them. So to go a step further, not only does the director have less time to get up in your beeswax, they don't care what you're doing. They have their own problems to worry about, yo. They are busy.
Yeah, they've gotten to a place where they've suffered through that.
They've done this
before.
They're
probably not going to inflict it on you. And if you have a less than intelligent boss and you're worried about that, we still recommend that you don't ask permission.
Exactly.
Just do what you believe you need to do. And if your boss has a problem with something, they might say something. They might not. But as they're doing that, if they do mention it to you, be careful about how you listen. Just because your boss asks questions doesn't mean they're saying you have to stop. Doesn't mean they're poking holes. They might be just information gathering. There are situations where, in fact, there's a whole group of people that when you bring them, this is kind of a tangent, but it's a hopefully a helpful example that will highlight that not all the things that people say and ask questions about are them saying, hey, don't do that. In fact, there's a whole group of people who, when you bring them a new idea, instead of their first sentence being, that's a good idea, their first sentence is, well, what about X? And frankly, those people usually just already decided, oh, that could be a good idea. And they're just trying to make it better.
Yeah.
So you don't have to assume that questions like that are coming from a negative place. It might be helpful to just kind of assume positive intent, which is a little bit of a simplification. Hopefully the anecdote or the example kind of helped to make the assumption of positive intent thing useful. I'm really just trying to highlight that sometimes when you see those questions or when you hear those questions and things like that and you view them as, oh no, they hate it, you might be wrong. You might be misinterpreting their questions.
Well, and sometimes it's not even questions, dude. I feel like you and I might have talked about this recently. At Manager Tools, I used to be responsible for managing public conferences. Mm-hmm. Mark, who was my manager at the time, Mark, one of the co-founders, said to me on many occasions, I wouldn't do it like that. And he didn't mean malicious intent, that's for sure. But he didn't necessarily mean positive intent either. He kind of meant like, I don't think so. But he didn't say, don't do it like that, Sarah. Or do it like that, Sarah. He just said, I don't think I'd do that. And guess what I did?
Whatever you wanted.
Whatever I wanted anyway. He didn't say don't do it. He didn't. He said I wouldn't do it that way. I'm like, okay, well, thank you for your input. And sometimes his way was right. And sometimes like, dang it, I should listen to him more. And sometimes I was like, see, knew it. That's all I'm saying.
And that's really, I think, something that managers, especially when you first start, you need to hear, you need to understand that if they don't specifically, and this is our guidance overall, when it comes to internal systems, team processes, et cetera, the Trinity reports, meetings, projects, et cetera, it's your call unless they say no.
Exactly.
And I wouldn't do it that way is not.
It's not stop doing it.
It's not. Those are different words. And you might have to ask yourself, do I think I'm doing the right thing? I've said this a lot recently, not on podcast though. Sometimes when you're a manager and you're new, or even if you're in the middle of your career, you look around, it looks like other people know what they're doing. And so there's some concern. I don't know what I'm doing. Do other people know what they're doing?
Nobody knows what they're doing.
They don't.
They don't.
I said this at a public conference a couple weeks ago. And at the end of the day, somebody came up to me and said, the first thing you said today is the thing that I found most useful. And I said, what was that? Because I was thinking about the intro in the morning.
Sure,
said,
yeah.
You said when you look around and it looks like everybody knows what they're doing, rest assured, they don't.
They don't.
You're not the only person who's wondering, am I doing the right thing?
We're all making it up.
That's why we're here. That's why we are here, so that you don't have to guess. You don't have to be worried that the choice you're making is the wrong one. That's why we are here. And you have to be knowledgeable, sure, about what the managerial culture is of the firm.
Yes, of course.
However, it's exceptionally unlikely that your boss is going to overmanage your management of your team. They honestly probably just don't have a ton of time for that.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, they wouldn't have hired you to do it if they wanted to do it themselves. They wouldn't have. I mean, they would just do it themselves if that's what their desire was.
This team, if that was what they wanted to do.
That's exactly it. We've done a bunch of examples, but there's also a great story about U.S. President Eisenhower, who appointed the former CEO of General Motors, Charles Wilson, to become Secretary of Defense. Now, obviously, Eisenhower's experience leading the U.S. and combined Allied armies in World War II meant he knew a lot himself about defense. At one point, Secretary Wilson asked Eisenhower for approval to make some organizational changes in the Navy and the Marine Corps. And President Eisenhower wrote back, "Charlie, you run defense. We can't both do it, and I won't do it. I was elected to worry about a lot of other things than day-to-day operations of a department. That's what I have you for. You're smart enough. I wouldn't have put you in the chair if you weren't smart enough to make this decision. You just got to take that trust and go with it."
A great thing you can do is eliminate dead reporting.
Such low-hanging fruit.
Seriously. When you first arrive, when you're first installed, ask everyone on your team to notify you of reports that leave the team. Mm-hmm. Be careful. They might misinterpret that to think that you're trying to figure out how to hide what's going on. And in your first week or so, say, I'm not going to be making any big changes right now, but I need to learn how the team works. One way to do that is look at our reporting. So whether you did so or not before, if you're sending a report up the chain or outside the team, please copy me. You don't need to send it to me first for approval. Whatever you're doing is fine. I won't know enough to correct or have problems with it. I trust you. I just want to start to learn what and how and when we're reporting. That will also help me when my boss or someone else asks about something we've been doing. Being copied on reporting will allow me to not look like an idiot. Uh-huh. If there are automated reports, please can I get someone to volunteer to figure out how to include me on those? I'll probably have to ask a bunch of dumb questions of a lot of you in the weeks ahead. Please try not to get frustrated when I ask you about a report that you're not responsible for. It's truly just me not knowing because there's a lot I don't know. And assume in the coming weeks during our one-on-ones, I'll be asking you and trying to understand what we're reporting and why, who sees those reports, and who outside the team has questions on reports if they do.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. And we say that again because we don't want them to think we're monitoring what they do. Time tracking is probably the wrong word, but that's the thing. Sometimes people are like, right. Oh no, is she trying to figure out if we have enough work to do and like what we're working on? And that's really not why we're doing this at all. And we just want to say something like that. Again, if you're a licensee, you could print out the script and essentially read it, but just to let them know, hey gang, I'm just doing this so that I can understand better. And when you start receiving these messages, when you start getting CC'd on these reports, you're surely going to discover two things: reports that are unnecessary and reporting that's not happening on the things that are necessary. So here's what you do. You get rid of the ones that you think are unnecessary. And once you're ready, around 90 days, that's when you start making these changes. Okay, so again, you identify them, you write them down, and when your 90 days is approaching, those are the ones that you start eliminating first. I don't want to say useless. That's the wrong word. The unnecessary ones. I'm so sorry. Unnecessary ones. And again, you don't ask permission. You just get rid of them. You just stop doing the report.
It's so funny. When I very first started here, there was a report that I turned in every Thursday for our Friday morning ops. And I did it every Thursday for a while. One Thursday, the font, I did something mm-hmm. wrong. Like I hit like a keystroke to do save as, I think, but I hit something wrong. I don't know what it was. I have never been able to replicate it. The font in the Excel mm-hmm. that got saved ended up being like 120.
Oh, wow.
Instead of like 24.
Unreadable.
100%. And it went into the folder. I didn't know. I was actually saving it to the folder. So I was doing the whole thing that I'm supposed to do. And then I went back into it the next week and noticed that it looked insane. And
yeah,
I thought to myself, that's weird. Why didn't anybody mention it?
Yeah. Why didn't somebody say something?
And surely someone could have mentioned it and fixed it.
Yeah, sure.
Or just mentioned it. Not a lot of people around here at that time probably would have mentioned it and fixed it. I would have been more expecting
that sounds right.
Like a phone call like, yo.
I can't read this thing. Yeah.
And I had never, by the way, heard anybody reference it outside of the fact that I had been assigned to do it.
Yeah.
So the next week I did the same thing to it on purpose and nobody said anything.
Mm-hmm.
I did that 4 times. And then I decided that my assumption was correct, that no one was reading it. And I stopped.
Yeah.
And it's been 9 years.
And no one's ever asked for it.
No one's ever said a thing.
Yeah, that's the beauty, right? That's the beauty of the identification of non-necessary reports via fully stopping the work, right? There's a built-in feedback mechanism
for
these changes when it comes to reporting. If you get rid of something and individuals who would have received that report question it or they say, oh my gosh, Kate, this is fully unreadable.
Right.
What are you doing over there, dude? If you hear within a week or two, wait a minute, maybe that was the wrong thing to get rid of.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is most of the reports, especially this one, it was simply a export. So if someone had come to me and said, oh, hey, that I noticed that thing's not in the folder, it would have taken me less than 10 minutes to get it to them. It wasn't even that much time savings. that I got back. It was just really, we don't need
this. Add them all up. That's
right.
The thing.
And that's the thing. It could, in aggregate, it's a big deal. And fully, if someone comes to you and says, hey, we really need that. Okay, most of the time that will take, you can say, I will have it to you in an hour. So sorry, I'll have it to you in an hour. To a certain extent, and this was my impression then, if somebody had come to me and said, hey, we really need that thing, I would have said, I'm so sorry, I'll have it to you in an hour. And I wouldn't have even mentioned the whole, I was testing to see if you know.
No, of course you wouldn't. That would be silly.
Yeah. And I will say I'm more comfortable usually than most people getting in a little bit of trouble. I've done this before. There was a point in my previous role where I didn't do a status report for 6 months and nobody noticed until later when they said, how did you have time to do this other thing? So there's that. That's a whole story about formatting bullets, which actually still gives me sadness in my brain. So we're going to skip over it. If you get rid of something and somebody says, yo, what's up? Remember, you can always reverse your decision.
Yeah, you absolutely can.
You can always put it back in place, but you don't have to immediately cave.
Right.
Maybe the recipient who comes to you and says, hey, where's the thing, is a powerful ally, or they're somebody way more important than you, or they're adamant. Okay, then again, you say, oh, I'm so sorry, I'll have that to you soon. Or you could also negotiate a better form, a different way of doing it. You could have it automated. Have you heard of macros? It could be different information. It could be delivered in another way.
Yeah.
Now, you'll, in order to do this, need to be able to talk specifically about employee hours that go into the report and have some idea of or be willing to suggest simpler, less effort-involved reporting that satisfies the needs. We're not trying to ignore those needs. Again, go into an Excel sheet and make the font 120 and call me if it doesn't make you feel crazy town. Let's collaborate, though. If it is important, let's be willing to meet with someone on their team who consumes the report or uses it. Find out what do they actually need. Work with your team to get them a simpler, new, easy, faster, macros-based. Macros.
Yeah, what you're talking about, Kate, I often talk about in our conferences. I call it an Easter egg. I'm like, create your entire report and then just cut out a really important paragraph. Remove it. Just remove it. Save that copy. That's the report you send, but you still have the copy. That way you can like do with training wheels, right? That's so, I'm like that. And then if they say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I'll send you the report. And then you give them the one because you still created it. But if you send out that report a few times, you just take out a valuable paragraph and no one notices.
Then that is an Easter egg.
The report.
I was worried that you weren't going to get the video game reference correct, but you did it. You sailed right through that.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good.
That makes me want to go back.
I don't play video games, just so you guys know.
Yeah, that's why I was.
It's not really my thing.
I thought to myself,
I will, let's see if she can do this.
Make me think of going back and rereading Ready Player One because it's full of
Easter
eggs.
Oh my gosh, such a good book. Love that book. So good. You don't even need to like video games to love Ready Player One.
Yes.
Just a plug for it. All the people, all the time. Love it.
The movie doesn't count, much like...
The movie doesn't count.
Tom Cruise's Jack Reacher. We love you, Tom, but you're just not him. And, okay, with all of this, with your Easter eggs...
Exactly. Yeah, we're talking Easter eggs. We're talking testing. We're talking, what if somebody comes back to you and says something you should know? It's been our experience that virtually no one will notice any report they ever stop getting. You'll be like... You've probably heard us refer to Margin Call.
Oh my gosh.
We're just like on movies right now. It's
at least we're talking about Ready Player One and not Margin Call, because we talk about Margin Call so much.
A lot. Exactly. There's the one scene. You can look it up. You can just like Google this like portion of the movie if you want. This is literally the best part where Juntold in Margin Call says, I don't hear a thing. And given the fact that no one will ever notice, you're going to, by default, win all these battles. And the battles are reasonable, effective battles for a proactive manager to have.
Mm-hmm.
Because they free up your team's productivity on the work you're responsible for.
Again, aggregate. In aggregate.
Yeah.
It's not the 10 minutes on this report. It's the aggregation. Also, by the way, that is my favorite scene, but that's not my favorite part. Ooh. And I know
I don't even know the difference.
The outlier, because there's a in that same scene at the board meeting table, they ask for the CV of the guy who figured out the problem, and he says his CV, and the guy says, "Oh, so you're a rocket scientist."
Mm, I like that. I like the part about the golden retriever. That is all the same scene.
A movie for everyone. A scene for everyone.
Scene for everyone.
Once you become a manager, you're obligated to become an effective manager. And effective managers are proactive managers. Your organization is not built for, nor does organizational theory support the idea that everything everyone does must be approved by their boss. That's
yeah.
It's as insane as 120 font in an Excel yeah. sheet. There are too many managers right now out there in the world doing nothing for fear of reprisal from bosses who will never notice.
Yeah.
In fact, so many people are worried about micromanagement when in fact the true problem in management is under management. It's
yeah.
lack of attention. It's so rampant that any amount of attention is seen as micromanagement, which is just an exaggeration on a scale that it's a pendulum swing. It's both inappropriate and frankly, it's selfish. It's selfish to say, because you've ignored me all this time, you suddenly paying me any attention whatsoever is the other end of the spectrum. That's not true. You know, there's dials here. There's tick marks on the dial. And it's not 0 to 100 or 100 mm-hmm. to 0. We could be at 50.
Right. That's the thing. Like getting involved, taking an active look at these things. I mean, folks, nothing happens by accident. Independent human effort is required for the effective functioning of every human organization.
Yeah.
You don't just like let it roll. There are structures against unfettered activity of any type, but we don't give up 70% of our ability to do what we need to get our own individual job done. Only 30, so you know, it's just a reference to a generally accepted percentage of our work that's considered to be the cost of the organizational tax we all pay to allow organizations as a whole to massively multiply the totality of the human abilities we all bring to the table. What I'm saying is, we give up a little to create a lot. A lot, a lot. And that's almost magical. Like us being able to move this many human beings toward a common target requires we not all just cowboy around or all just like throw our hands in the air. Well, this is how it's always been. I guess we're just going to let it go like that. You got to get involved. You got to do stuff.
I mean, I want a cowboy around. That sounds great.
You can wear the hat, but you can't act like one.
Unfortunately, I actually don't really pull off a cowboy hat that
not
well.
Not a hat guy? I've never even worn one.
That's not true. I have a picture of you wearing one. Don't think for a second that 150,000 individuals working on their own could produce an Apple iPhone and all of the systems necessary mm-hmm. for it to perform the way it does just by cowboying around.
Right, exactly.
Only some of the Apple people would wear hats anyway. Human organizations, as we've said from the beginning of this organization almost two decades ago, are widely regarded as the greatest achievement of mankind. Mm-hmm. When you were an individual contributor, did you ask permission to do your job? No, you didn't. There were rules and you knew what they were and you almost always stayed within them. Unless you're me and you didn't do your status report.
You just didn't do so.
Surely there were also times, Kate, where you broke the rules without malice or ill intent. You guys get that credit. I did it on purpose. Knowing full well that you could do so, not because everyone would agree with what you were doing, but because nobody would ever know.
Exactly. And we've all done it.
I just suppose I didn't have malice or ill intent. I just had intent.
Yeah.
It wasn't ill intent. You just had intent. But I did do it on purpose.
Right. I mean, we all do it every day. I mean, that thing that you're leaving, that you're not getting done today, that you probably should get done today, but you're going to do this other thing instead. Every single day, we're making decisions about where we spend our time and what we spend our time on because we're like, well, no one will really know and I could fix it tomorrow and that'll be fine.
Also, we get a lot done. We still get a lot done. Imagine if we tried even harder. We could get so much done.
So much done. And humorously, the organizations where managers refuse to engage in creative problem solving without specific permission are most federal governments, not known to be the most effective or efficient organizations to begin with. So, I mean, we don't really have to worry about the lack of creativity generally being applied in our organizations. You have all the role power you need to manage your team the way you think is best, the way you see fit. Mm-hmm. It's been given to you.
Yeah, that's how and why your organization is organized, org charted, built mm-hmm. the way that it is. Your role power, and we said this before, is the ability to speak to your team as if you were the CEO of the firm. When you decide how something is going to be done on your team, we're not saying you will get pushback or that you should do it without educating your team. In some cases, that means persuading them. But when you decide how something is going to be done on your team, your decision carries the weight of the CEO. The same way things like badge laws, compensation rules, financial processes are not arguable. These things are decided at levels above you, mm-hmm. and you have purview over them. And nobody on your team can simply flout organizational norms. They aren't going to get very much traction when they say, oh, I'd like to be paid in Bitcoin. Sorry, pard, that's not what we're doing.
Right, but it's not what we're doing. And folks, we know. You're not the CEO. Well, you might be the CEO. I shouldn't say that.
Okay.
I know. You might be thinking, Kay and Sarah, I'm not the CEO. It's certainly true that the difference between you and the CEO is if you're not the CEO, it's far more likely that your rule or process or system change could be overturned by someone above you. And they are authorized to do so. And frankly, I'm going to be honest, sometimes they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. What's not okay, nor is it efficient or effective or proactive, what's not okay is referring every decision about your team to your boss or, again, worst of all, doing nothing at all. Imagine if your directs asked you for approval for every single thing they did. How would that even work?
It wouldn't.
Can you imagine? And frankly, they do sometimes now, don't they? They're like, boss, what do I do? And you think to yourself, your job, that's what, because I can't tell you all the things to do. And it's that exact thing. It doesn't work. That's why organizations are shaped this way. That's why you only have a certain number of directs. It's not, you're not supposed to worry about making changes or ask your boss to approve them all.
It's also why we hire well.
Exactly.
You can also think of all of this using the middleman test. Do you think of effective managers as being proactive or inactive? Do you want a boss who takes action or one who waits? Do you want a boss who simply accepts the way things are? Or do you want a boss who does her best to make smart changes, well aware that she might get overruled and still believing in what she's doing and communicating constantly about how things are going and how she and you and your teammates are going to get where they believe you should be? If you want it from a boss, you shouldn't deny it to your own team.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And everyone wants that. Guys, be that manager. Be that manager.
Atlanta, April 16th and 17th, we're hosting an EMC and ECC in your area, Effective Management and Effective Communications. If you're in the Atlanta metro area or just in the Southern United States, it's an opportunity to learn the next steps to being a more effective professional. Better management, better communication. And an opportunity to meet other professionals in the area. We'd love to see you there. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
All right. So the last piece of our guidance then. Create new reporting piece. So for all of these processes and systems that are necessary and non-existent, create them again without asking permission. That is, consider what your team does and what previous reporting shows and doesn't show. And you can no doubt come up with some new reporting that more accurately portrays what your team does and how it delivers value to the organization.
Yeah, you don't need to show them everything.
Yeah, like not granular to that degree. You have to decide what's most important. And you have to decide what you're going to know that would be enough information for you, but maybe too much information for your boss, so that you can take it and you can communicate to your boss what's happening at a much higher level than you're going to see.
Your boss needs to know, but they don't need everything.
Yeah, no, they don't want everything.
Yeah, you don't have to set a detailed analysis.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. It might be worthwhile considering your boss's MT disk profile.
Yeah.
Even if they haven't taken the instrument, you can likely figure out their profile.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that as you move up the ladder, Heidis make up a higher and higher percentage of leaders and executives.
Probably a good place to start.
And just a small thought. It's a note from two Heidi executives. No judgment.
No judgment.
Do you think your high D boss, if you have one, and we suggest you do pay attention, ask of yourself, not just say, oh, they're all high Ds. Yeah. It's not true. We're not all high Ds. Ask yourself, though, if you think a high D boss wants a detailed analysis, probably what she would say is, well, your call. As long as it doesn't come back and bite me, I'm good. You're good. Mm-hmm. We're good.
Yeah, I literally today, in response to a really long email I got that said, hey, we're going to talk about this in our one-on-one later, I literally replied, Kate, and my reply was, if we're going to talk about later, I'm not reading this email. That was my reply. Because I don't have time to do both things. And that's kind of how your boss is thinking about it, right? They trust you. They're like, okay, cool. You're going to tell me what I need to know. I don't need to read this thing. That's exactly it. Just, it's that. So, you're doing all this reporting. Also, we should say, because you're a good manager and you're creating for your team a good number two, someone to be your right hand, someone to possibly succeed you. I think we did a podcast on succession planning last week or the week before last. And if this is the case, why not delegate this reporting, the review of this reporting, maybe even the creation, draft one of this reporting, to your number two? It's a great opportunity and practice for them.
Yeah.
To come up with some and send it over.
Yeah. And if they do well at it, you can do a rotation. You can have them practice delegating to the next person. If you want to do that, you can empower them and
exactly.
Learn more things and help prepare them for the next role.
Right.
Which is also a proactive thing, because an effective manager is a proactive manager. We don't accept that things are just the way that they're supposed to be. The world, your market, your customers, your company are constantly changing.
Yeah, exactly.
Reports live lives that are honestly too long. They should not survive that long due to lack of attention, which is ironic because they're actually produced for attention purposes. How do they not wither on the vine more quickly? The proactive manager finds reports that are unnecessary or bloated or simply no longer used by recipients and eliminates them in favor of better, simpler, faster reporting. And we encourage you to do so.
Yeah, we do. Thanks, Kate.
Thank you, Sarah. That's all for today, y'all. We'll see you back next week with a new topic.
Bye, everyone.